live, figuratively speaking only. It's the Mike Novak Show, the best darn gardening slash environment slash green living show this side of the Mississippi. Now, if I could only figure out which side of the Mississippi I'm on. While I work on it, we'll let the fella sing.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Well, as always, lots going on today. Thank you for being with me. And it all starts with a visit I made to the Chicago suburb of Oak Park to talk to Pam Todd, who is a co-founder of the West Cook Wild Ones. She and her friends got inspired by entomologist Doug Tallamy, who is the author of a book called Bringing Nature Home. I've talked a lot about that on my show in the past. And it's about the value of native flora and fauna. So the folks at the West Cook Wild Ones decided to create a wildlife corridor between Thatcher Woods in Maywood River Forest, that would be on the west side, and Columbus Park on the east side, which is actually on the near west side of Chicago. I don't want to get you all confused here. The idea, we stretch from east to west here in this part of the area. Now, the total distance is about 4 miles, and the idea is to create habitat for birds, butterflies, and other wildlife in any space available, including backyards, sometimes only 2 yards per block. It's an interesting project. By the way, Dr. Tallamy will be speaking at the Living Landscapes Conference on Sunday, May 17th at Dominican University in River Forest. You can get more information on my website, MikeNovak.net. So we'll start with that conversation with Pam Todd and some of her friends out Oak Park way. Then I talked to Sidney Phelps from Bonnie Plants, a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. He's a distribution manager at Bonnie's corporate headquarters in Union Springs, Alabama. He'll tell us about the new Bonnie Plants app for iPhone, as well as some of the cool new plants that you can find at local retailers all over the country. Before we get rolling, though, if you live in the Chicago area, there are a lot of great plant sales happening right now, including at the Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse on May 16th and 17th, where their 2015 plant sale features more than 150 varieties of organically grown vegetable, herb, and flower seedlings, including open pollinated and heirloom tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants, as well as herbs, greens, and onions. The best part is that the plants run from $2 to $5. What a deal. Probably the easiest place to find info is on the Facebook page for Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse. You can also go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Another great sale, and I wanted to get this out there as well, is courtesy of the Peterson Garden Project. From the 15th through the 17th at the PGP Learning Center, 4642 North Francisco Avenue in Chicago. It's their fourth annual plant sale and bake sale fundraiser. Vegetable and herb seedlings are locally grown in certified organic soil. They're hand-selected for growing well in Chicago. Heirloom favorites will be available, as well as a few disease-resistant tomato and basil varieties. And all proceeds from the sale benefit a really great organization, Peterson Garden Project, and their education programs. Go to petersongarden.org for more information, or you can always, as I said, go to MikeNovak.net. When we come back, I head over to Oak Park to find out how you create a wildlife corridor in the suburbs. This is the Mike Novak Show.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak,
I'm familiar with his work.
And so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Data, options.
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of patach.
Mr. Wolf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
Here's a quick fertilizer primer, courtesy of Milorganite. Milorganite contains 5% organic nitrogen, 2% phosphorus, and 4% iron. Over 60% of the nitrogen in Milorganite is water-insoluble and delivered to the roots via microbial activity. Microbial activity occurs when soil moisture is adequate and soil temperatures are between 55 and 85 degrees Fahrenheit. When these conditions are favorable, the microbes break down the Milorganite granule into a plant-available form and the nutrients are taken up by the roots. Now, the good news is when the conditions are not favorable, Milorganite's nutrients stay in the soil until conditions are right for root uptake. Go natural. Use Milorganite for all your lawn and garden needs. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you. Yeah, Oak Park, and the home of Pam Todd, who's co-founder of the West Cook Wild Ones. And she is out to change the world, no less, by creating a habitat corridor. First of all, I guess you have to explain, Pam, what that is, what that means, and secondly, how you hope to accomplish it.
Oh, okay. Well, the concept of a wildlife corridor is certainly not unique in restoration communities.
Right.
You know, scientists use it, and there's actually maps that the DNR has in Illinois and other states that identify properties that they would like to acquire to increase the connectivity between different natural areas. So, as you know, Doug Tallamy's idea is to create what he calls a backyard national park and have people plant natives in their yards to enhance what the natural areas are already doing, at least that's how I think of it, and also to help provide connectivity for migratory species and increase biodiversity, just provide more habitat in general. So what we're trying to do on a very small scale, maybe as a pilot project I think of it as, is connect Thatcher Woods to Columbus Park by getting at least two people on every block to plant natives.
Just two.
Just what? Well, now, that's a start.
And the question, I got lots of questions about it.
Yeah.
One of the first questions is, how do you come up with two? Is this the tipping point? I mean, could it be three? Could it be four? And how do you drag people into this?
Well, I think every single person should have natives in their yard.
Right.
Two is certainly just a goal for us. And we have a lot of ways that we started by just having monthly meetings. Like all Wild Ones chapters, we became a chapter of the National Organization of Wild Ones about almost 2 years ago.
Oh, this is so poetic. Here we are talking about native plants, and the lawn care guys just fired up the machines down the block. This is awesome. See, and this is what you're dealing with. You're trying to set up a corridor here in the suburbs where most people, you were pointing out next door, we're not naming names here, but next door you've got the lawn folks who have the perfect lawn, and here you have Creeping Charlie and clover and violets and really cool stuff in your lawn.
Yeah, we have
biodiversity in your lawn.
And our neighbors actually have mowed their dandelions, but they also have dandelions. And you know that a lot of the parks here have dandelions, and we're proud of our dandelions.
Why not? And I had dandelion greens for dinner the other night, so I'm sold. Sold on that concept. But here you are trying to get a few people on each block. And how long is the distance between Thatcher Woods and where?
Columbus Park.
Okay, so how long is that?
Let's see. I think it's about a mile from here to Harlem, and then maybe two more miles. So it's probably 4 miles altogether.
All right, and folks should know, who don't know this area, It's the western side of Chicago, the nearest western suburb to Chicago on the west side, going west then to Thatcher Woods. And we're talking suburbia here, your basic suburbia, although right. There is part of Forest Preserve here, too?
Thatcher Woods is a forest preserve. It's part of the Cook County Forest Preserves. Mm-hmm. Columbus Park is a Chicago Park District park.
And that's really two different things, obviously.
Right. And part of the symbolic importance to me is that they're both Jens Jensen locations. So Columbus Park was designed by Jens Jensen, and the forest preserves, of course, he had a large part in creating. And there's several Jens Jensen parks in Elk Park, including Taylor Park, which is just two blocks south of us here, where our park district, which is quite enlightened, actually created a fen of sorts. They had a lower part of the park that was always collecting water, and they could never grow grass there, and they finally said, let's turn it into a wetlands. And if you drive by it on Ridgeland, you'll see there's a beautiful wetland there.
That's too enlightened. How do I deal with that? I don't know what to say. But I do want to add that as we were standing here and I'm watching the guys mow, and I can't wait till they put the chemicals down, then I heard the plane go by overhead and then the train whistle, and of course the cars have been coming. I mean, how do you expect to affect wildlife with two homes per block in a four-mile stretch? Does this really... Will it work, and how do you quantify that?
Will it work? Yes. As you know, we're on the Mississippi Flyway, so we have birds going through here every spring and every fall. They migrate through, and you can see incredible diversity in bird life. And in fact, Thatcher Woods has got more diversity than many other places in Chicago when they do the Audubon bird counts every year. But I really had that experience in my own yard, and that's why I decided to do this. Because about
you had this experience in your
increasing biodiversity.
Yeah, okay. Tell me what happened.
Well, I planted a little pocket prairie in the back about 8 or 9 years ago under the influence of.
Do I get to see it?
Of course. Yeah.
Let's wander there while you're talking. Go ahead.
I have a friend who's a.
Because I want to get away from the lawnmowers anyway.
I have a friend who is the steward of Belmont Prairie, or was at the time, and she's a restoration ecologist, and we kind of raised our children together. This was many years ago, and I became very interested in prairies because of just walking the prairie and hearing her excitement about it, and eventually I wrote a book called The Blind Faith Hotel, which is a young adult novel that has prairie preservation at kind of the heart of it. And in the course of doing that, I thought, well, I guess I'm going to have to live this out. I'm going to have to plant a prairie. So this is my little pocket prairie.
So what does it have in here that we should know about?
The way I started this garden was we just put down newspaper and killed all the grass the way you're supposed to, except I'm very impatient. So I waited about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, and then I took it up and started digging it and taking all the weeds out. And so I was able to...
That's not very long time to wait for nature to take its course.
No, well, you know, I waited till the grass was yellow and dead, and then I just got rid of the sod and got rid of the weeds the best I could. And I overseeded it with a quarter acre worth of seed that I bought from Prairie Moon. And it was a seed mix of prairie plants. So this used to be just kind of an assortment of things that decided where they wanted to grow. And then they kind of organized themselves, as plants will do. They went where they wanted to go over the years. And then over time, I thought I should really make this a little more like a traditional garden. And so that's what I'm trying to do now. I've relocated things a little.
Well, and folks should know that it's not terribly large here. We're talking maybe 20 feet deep and wide, 25, who knows, maybe something like that. So it's not
that huge. Definitely pocket prairie size.
Now, and the point, though, as you were saying, is that you witnessed biodiversity in your own backyard. What happened?
Oh, so just about 2 years after, well, first of all, I have cup plant here that my friend gave me.
Oh, dear, I have, okay.
But I love I mean, you have to work to control it because it has
a mind of its own. Do you ever? Do you have it growing in your alley, too, the way it does in mine?
Oh, I haven't noticed it in the alley.
It's taken over my alley. I mean, I planted like 3 cup plants, and now there are thousands of them in my neighborhood.
Oh, lovely. The goldfinches probably send you a thank you note.
The goldfinches love them. The neighbors, I think, are perplexed because they don't seem to know what's going on. It's just that there's a lot of yellow flowers in the summer.
Oh, that's so funny. I just dug mine up and moved it to the back row there, and it makes a beautiful screen. You can't see beyond my fence.
That's true.
And you feel like you are in a prairie.
Yeah.
So it'll grow up very quickly. Now it's, maybe 3 feet tall, and it'll...
It's like 2 feet tall. It's just starting. And actually, this is the time of year to dig it out when you see it. You know, you'll see the little babies all over the place.
And everything is happy to be moved this time of year. I found with the prairie plants that, you know, they don't mind being dug up and relocated, so you can have a clump of this and a clump of that, and it'll look like... You know, a garden in whatever.
So you saw goldfinches, obviously.
Back to the story.
That's okay. I was once described as highly distractible, but so are you.
So the goldfinches love cup plant, as you know. And they, you know, you see them just swinging on there and eating the seeds. It's so beautiful, and their charming songs and, you know, their flight pattern. So after a little while, they nested locally, which was really kind of fun to have them around the whole year because we don't normally. And then about a year later, a Cooper's hawk nested in our front yard, which that wasn't too nice for the goldfinches or any of the birds. But it was so exciting to me that we could have like a complete ecosystem restoring itself.
And in suburbia, of all places, with the lawnmower down the block.
Well, that was the best part because the birds, the first year, the eggs...
Listen to those birds right now. It's a symphony.
I know. They're having their
So you had the Cooper's hawk come in.
The Cooper's hawk. So the first year they didn't, the eggs didn't hatch, but they came back the next year in the same nest, and they fledged, they raised a whole brood of...
Where was that nest?
The tree is gone now. Unfortunately, the tree died, but it was right in front of our house. But the best part was that it was a community event, you know. So people would come, this being Oak Park, people would come at night, you know, with their wine glasses and their binoculars.
That is so like, Oak Park. It was white wine, I'm sure, too.
It was like Ravinia. So
who got the idea of doing the corridor, the wildlife corridor?
So I have a day job. I do strategy for biotechs, for marketing for biotechs online primarily. But anyway, I thought, why doesn't somebody, you know, wild reporters are really important. And I read Doug Tallamy's book and I was really excited about it. And I thought, why doesn't somebody have an online method of engaging people in this with social media? And, you know, everybody could get excited about being in a corridor. And so a friend of mine encouraged me to present at Wild Things. 2 years ago, Wild Things is the Chicago Wilderness Conference.
Right.
So I did, and there was a lot of interest in it. And Doug Tallamy happened to be speaking that year. And so my friend also encouraged me to talk to Doug, which I did. And he was very nice and, you know, listened and nodded and said, in fact, Cornell Lab of Ornithology is trying to do something like this. And they do. They have a nice yard map sort of thing. But he said, you know, you're going to be really, this is going to be hard to do if you try to do this by yourself. You really need other people. Why don't you go to Wild Ones? And so I did, and ended up talking to a few friends. And, you know, we went to coffee and we walked out of the coffee shop. And one of the women said, okay, let's just do it. And so we decided to form a Wild Ones chapter and have this whole momentum of the wildlife corridor to kind of create a project. We applied for a grant. We got a grant from the village because Oak Park's Community Foundation is very interested in sustainability issues. And
so are you going to map this so people can see what's going on? And then are you going to do counts of birds and insects and that sort of thing?
Well, we've already started the map. We have a Google map, and it probably has about 120 people on it now.
So where can folks find this?
It's on our website, westcook.wildones.org. In the resource section. And if they want to be on our map, they can just email us. The email address is also on the website. So we're happy to add people to the map. You just have to send your address and your email. And actually, the long-term goal, well, there's there's a bigger game, of course. One thing we'd like to do, which is why we're collecting email addresses, is reach out to people over time and find out if it's actually changing their environment, just like you mentioned. You know, have they spotted more butterflies or birds or bees, or, you know, how has it actually changed their little tiny ecosystem? So that's part of the vision. Also, we've begun connecting to other organizations, actually through Wild Things this year. Stephen Packard had a Next Big Thing workshop, and people were able to present their ideas. And out of that, I connected with June Keebler, who's she's actually started the King County Wild Ones, but she's also a board member of the Conservation Foundation. And Peggy Simonson, who's with Citizens for Conservation, and both of those organizations certify yards. You probably know that they go out and encourage people to plant native and help them, you know, think
about. Are
you
talking about the Conservation at Home?
Conservation at Home program,
yeah, right,
through Conservation Foundation, yeah. Exactly. So we're hoping to do something on a regional level. And
this is a great start, though. I mean, the idea, if this works, and I imagine you'd have to do more than one of these, and just to see how, to try it out and just see how what are the best practices to do something like this.
Oh, you mean in terms of engaging people?
Yeah, engaging people and what kind of plants are going to work. I don't suppose you have a plant palette at all. Are you telling people just make sure they're natives, or do you have specific plants you have in mind?
Well, you know, part of the Wild Ones model is to have monthly meetings where you bring in experts that, we've had Doug Tarrin from Peggy Notabart, who's a butterfly expert. We've had Stephen Packard talk about, you know, what you might plan to invite birds to your yard. And, you know, we've had other experts that are educating people about how to do it, what to plant.
Right. And a Conservation at Home works, too, because you get points for different kinds of things you do in your yard, not just plants, but, you know, the way you do things.
Yeah, that's right. They have a great model. And in fact, that's what got me started on this personally, is that it was frustrating to see everyone, like the National Wildlife Federation, Audubon, everyone wants you to plant habitat for wildlife, but there's no coordinated effort. So they're all kind of doing their own little branded thing. And I feel like what we need to do is create an organized effort, supported hopefully by government and park districts and, you know, whoever else has a vested interest in this, to create one thing that we can all feel like we're a part of.
And wouldn't it be amazing if you could go to a map and see a string of all these corridors throughout the Midwest, or even the whole country, starting here, right here in Oak Park, with the trains and the airplanes and the cars and the lawnmowers.
Yeah, and it would be even more amazing, and Yard Map is doing this somewhat. Their map, I think, is a little more citizen science based. So
who is this?
Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and Doug Talmy is actually involved with this. They have something called Yard Map, which is an online community. Really, they have a social aspect, and you could post pictures. But part of their vision is that you map your yard using like a geo-targeted map. You actually show what is growing in your yard, and then they, in fact, will be highly scientific about showing change over time. So from the viewpoint, you know, there's two ways of looking at this. One is from the scientists trying to say, what are we doing? You know, and they want to, of course, be very careful about, you know, statistically doing everything in the proper way.
Well, if you don't have science involved, you really have nothing.
Well, I don't know if that's true.
Oh, okay. Controversy. Yay.
When I wanted to do this Wild Things presentation, I looked at what was out there, and much of it is citizen science. So it's put forward by the scientists who want to engage people in their research, which is great, and it builds awareness, and it helps the scientists. But there's a lot of people that just want to get started, and they don't know how. You know, that I think that's why the Monarch Watch, the whole push to get habitat for monarchs is so engaging, because people see, oh, I love this bird, this butterfly, it's so charismatic, what can I do? It's disappearing, can I do something? And all they have to do is plant milkweed. You know, it's just like, get started easy. You know, there has to be an easy way to get started, because if you say, you know,
it's a no-brainer, milkweed, Or a monarch plant, which is what I call it, because the reason people don't plant milkweed is because the word weed is in it. And the other funny thing, and Doug Tarrant is the one who said this to me, actually, from Peggy Notabart. He said, you know, people love butterflies until they find out they're insects. And then they go, ooh, well, that I'm not so sure I really like butterflies.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we have to change the whole aesthetic. Too.
I mean,
having holes in your leaves is okay.
Yeah, you've drunk the Kool-Aid here. You've read the book. Yeah, that is, and so that takes us to, and I have drunk that Kool-Aid too. Actually, I've been preaching this gospel for several years now, ever since I read Doug's book, and even before then, I would tell people, yeah. Why is your response to an insect to try to squish it? That's irrational. That's just irrational behavior. But let's take us to the conference, because on May 17th, Doug Tallamy is coming into town and you're having a conference. Tell me briefly about your conference.
This is West Cook Wild Ones. This is our first native gardening conference. With his permission, we named it Living Landscapes, which is the title of Doug's new book as well. I love the idea of bringing your yard to life. First presentation will be Doug Tallamy at noon, and then we have a series of workshops in the afternoon. They're on rain gardens, designing with native gardens. That's Trish Bechtard from Midwest Ground Covers, and she does a beautiful presentation. I think this is one of the key things, is getting people to see you can have a beautiful garden and it can create, you know, habitat. You don't have to make that choice, you know.
And if people want to get involved with the conference, where do they go?
So you can go to westcook.wildones.org and find all the information there. We have online registration, and you can find that through our website as well.
Okay. Well, I heard my train. I think I got to catch that train that's going by there. But Pam Todd, thank you so much. Great idea. We have to keep track of this and find out how this succeeds. And I imagine that if folks from this area want to get involved in your biodiversity corridor, what do you call it?
A habitat corridor.
Habitat corridor. It's kind of all the same.
Yeah.
Do they go to the West?
Right. You could contact us through the website. Our email is there. There's a link to volunteer. It's really pretty user-friendly. And, yeah, we would love to hear from anybody that wants to become involved or organizations that want to be part of. We're having a meeting on the morning of the conference at Dominican University. I should have said it's at Dominican University.
That would help.
River Forest. And we're having a meeting that morning for anybody interested in expanding it and making it more regional. So, you know,
there are people in other areas who might want to do this, and it makes sense. And wouldn't it be great to have an organization of these natural corridors?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the goal, obviously. Yeah. And I think people are getting excited about it. Doug Tallamy's really inspired a movement.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
After I visited Pam, I headed down the road a couple of miles to another stop in Oak Park in the Wildlife Corridor to meet with...
I'm Dick Alton. I'm with Euclid Avenue United Methodist Church on the chair of the Green Action Team. And we have a fabulous Green Action team. And we got solar on our roof. We got geothermal. We have a permeable brick right here we're standing
by. I like that, yes.
All the water goes in. We got rid of 81% of all of our carbon energy out of our building by putting geothermal in. Anyway, we're really excited about our Monarch waste station.
And it's really, you know, it's very modest, but here it is.
Well, it looks beautiful in the summertime.
And you are?
I'm Sally Stovall.
You can see the sign right here. We're right on Euclid Avenue in Oak Park. And it, about, what, how far are we from where I just met Pam at her place? So a couple of miles.
A couple
basically.
Miles, yeah.
Yeah. And it all part of the corridor that she was talking about.
So we were a little bit before the corridor. They were beginning to get into native plants, et cetera, and they had a big sale. And that's what really jump-started us. We went and got a whole bunch of all these flowers. They have little stakes on them. We haven't really redone them. So we bought all these plants and everything for our monarchs. And it's a great story. So here we have we have some kind of what's the favorite weeds?
Milkweed.
The milkweed. We have milkweed right here. And so we were growing milkweed, and after worship service, I was standing here with a guy who's a lawyer of all things. He had his little kid here, and he was explaining to the little kid that this is for the monarchs, everything. And you can see there's a couple of monarchs flying around. And he put his finger out, and the monarch landed on his finger. And the little kid was just taken back, said, "Dad, are you really close with monarchs?" Anyway, it's been a really great thing for our kids, and they help keep up the garden. They
and I love the fact that this is through Monarch Watch. It says Monarch Way Station. This site provides milkweeds, nectar sources, and shelter needed to sustain monarch butterflies as they migrate through North America. Certified and registered by Monarch Watch as an official Monarch Waste. I got to get one of those for my yard.
Yes, because they won't come. They don't know it until they get the sign up. They read these signs.
The monarchs.
The monarchs.
Yes, yes, of course. They're very smart insects.
So we put up solar here, and we brought our Methodist bishop here. And the Methodist bishop did the solar, but she was really excited coming over and blessing our Monarch Way Station. She said, "That is so cool." Yeah. She was really excited.
Well, and of course, the subject of this story is Pam doing her corridor, her habitat corridor here in the near western suburbs of Chicago. And what you're proving here with the Monarch Way Station is it doesn't take much, does it, to attract the insects?
No, it doesn't. It, not only that, but it's easy to do because the wild ones is giving us the plants. I mean, it's not like we have to go grow the plants and even help us put them in. I mean, they really kind of helped us, you know, you need to put these kind of plants around to really help the monarchs.
Do you have a sense of what kind of plants, or do I have to go read the tags here to find out what
we got milkweed, but you can see right here, we have, it's called
purple prairie clove. Clover.
Yeah, clover. And we have the cups back there that are just growing.
Oh, well, we talked about cup plants over at Pam's. Right. They go nuts.
They do. So you can see we cut them back, but they provide the water for the monarchs, and we have so many different
kinds. We have a number of grasses. We have different kinds of grasses. Mm-hmm. And
swamp milkweed.
Of course.
And this one, though, is a butterfly weed.
That's also an asclepias.
And this one is a yellow coneflower.
I'm glad you still got the tags in there. It's very important to have those.
I need to refresh them.
I don't want to go trampling stuff here in your garden.
This is wild geraniums.
Oh, great. Yeah. Cranesbill.
Yes. And this is also the same thing.
And this is Richard reaching down and grabbing the stakes in the ground.
A little blue stem.
We grew some from seed in my yard last year. It's coming back
from
this year.
From seed?
Yeah, from seed.
And we have a church about four blocks over, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. And it was interesting. They originally got it started because they, in the front of the church, they have this native garden. And this the lady who keeps it said, "I'll give you native plants for my garden." And she went in there and started ripping them out. And that's really how we started.
So are they considered to be on the corridor as well? I mean, is this, how loosely organized is this?
I think we're still at the place where people are learning about it. Mm-hmm. And the process is still growing about how
And that's part of my job, too. I'm going to get the word out and tell people that if you live in this area, you should be part of it. And if you don't live in this area, you should start your own habitat corridor.
Or your neighbors. I mean, this we were talking about at the, where were we last night? The Action Cafe.
Action Cafe. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about every block should have, you know, be pushing their people to put up native plants for the butterflies.
I'm telling you what you got to do.
Ah!
You got to take that lawn. See, now we're across the street from the church, and there's a little plot here next to the parking lot. You've got all that land there, which is turf, wasted space.
Wasted space.
It's turf.
That's the next step.
Is it?
Yeah.
And
then
imagine,
absolutely.
Though, the next step is convincing the congregation that you want to do that.
It's slow, though. But also, we have another garden, a big garden on the other side of the building that historically has been just
more of a traditional flower garden.
Yeah. So we're working on that too now.
One step at a time, but I like the idea. Just get this, spread this even on this one block.
Yes.
I have a friend who lives in Minnesota, and they live in a village, and they just ban grass.
For the whole village?
The whole village.
I kind of like that idea.
I like that idea, too.
I think that's fabulous.
It's amazing.
Well, and the reason...
He said it's a useless plant.
It's not completely useless. I do understand when people say that there's an aesthetic to lawn. It is still a living, growing thing, and
it absorbs water, and
it can hold soil together. But native plants are so much better than the turf grass we have.
Absolutely.
And the grass is better than asphalt. We all agree on that. we're not going to go there. But I mean, the other thing is permeable brick. I mean, this is. We got to get the water back in the ground, out of the sewage system. We're going to have all kinds of flow. Even the city of Chicago has agreed that we need to unhook the downspouts, let the water into the ground, get it out of the sewage system.
Well, listen, Richard and Sally, thank you so much. This is a great start, and I appreciate you taking the time to show me, because I know you got to run off right now. But
we got to go try to get our. We got to get green energy for this village, and we're going to a meeting where they're going to talk about aggregating our electric power.
I thought you were already aggregating.
We did. We aggregated 2 years ago to go green, and then in the wisdom of our trustees, when it got a lot of pressure on them, they said, well, it's a little bit cheaper to go brown, and then you can opt out of the brown and go to green. So we're in the midst of redeciding we're going to go green. So this is what our commission...
So the first move was to save money. Now the second move is to actually go green.
So after they did that, they had a trustee meeting, and we had 300 people all from all the different congregations come. What? And actually, the trustees turned over the meeting. What are you thinking about? Take down that sign that says we're a green village. And they got really embarrassed, and they've sworn up and down they will never do it again. But we're going to go to this meeting to make sure.
Well, then... Go. You guys have the green work to do. It's a pleasure meeting both
of you.
Nice to meet you.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Gardeners can be a little strange, to put it mildly. We love to grow flowers, and we love to have them in floral arrangements indoors, but the idea of cutting them from our own gardens turns us into overprotective parents who tend to spare the snippers and spoil the child. Well, the May-June issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine might help you get over that neurosis. There's a story about how to grow your own cutting garden, which means that you'll always have plenty of blooms to spare when it comes to treating yourself and your friends to spectacular bouquets. Part of the deal is to plant them in rows and treat them as a crop, which no self-respecting landscaper would ever do. And the story also helps you with your choices, including the kinds of annuals and perennials to feature. Then there's my column on the inside back page. Some folks think it could benefit from a little snipping there. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Those of you who are regular listeners to the show, certainly for the past couple of years, will recognize one of my sponsors as Bonnie Plants. And let me tell you right now that you can find a wealth of information about Bonnie Plants basically at bonnieplants.com. And that's spelled B-O-N-N-I-E plants.com. And last year on my show, I had Sydney Phelps, distribution manager at Bonnie Plants, out of their corporate headquarters in Union Springs, Alabama. And guess what? I've got them back here today as we, well, in Chicago. I don't know what's going on in Alabama there, Sydney, but here in Chicago, it's cold. It's cold and it's nasty here. What's it like down there?
Well, I tell you, Mike, we are wide open. We're getting good weather. We've been sunny here the past several days instead of the rain we had a couple of weeks ago. So everybody is full speed ahead in their gardens, and we're just kind of enjoying it while it's lasting right now.
That's what you want. And I realize that talking to you today, you're in the middle of things, you know, in terms of the growing season. This is it, baby, right?
We are wide open, and we have got the throttle to the floor at this point in time. You know, this is our really big season. The South generally has its peak, as we call it, Good Friday and after. And then with the Midwest and Northeast, you get your pops there for Mother's Day, Memorial Day.
Right.
We're right in that transition period where everybody, you know, is trying to get their yards together, as well as their gardens. You know, this is the time when everybody's kind of starting to gather and get everything cleaned up for the spring and summer.
So what does that mean for a guy like you? I mean, I don't want to get too much into the arcane issues of your particular job, but I'm always fascinated at the kinds of work that different people do. And as a distribution manager, I guess one of the things you've just pointed out is you have to keep track of the different parts of the country and who's going to get what when. Now, for instance, as you mentioned, after Good Friday in the South, boom, you're starting to do work. But up here, it was still really cold and not much going on. Now, as we head into the beginning of May, we've had some warm weather here in the Midwest, although it's chilly today. And that's part of the problem, too, is that, you know, it ebbs and flows up here. And as you mentioned, really in the Midwest, Mother's Day is what people aim towards. But then you've got places like, well, let's say New England, where it stays cold much longer. So you have to take all of this into account, don't you?
Yeah, we really do. But that's the benefit of having 65 growing facilities across the continental United States is, you know, what I'm doing in Alabama is entirely different than what's happening in Chicago, for example. We've got two locations in the Chicago area that grow for that area. So not only are the plants climatized to your cold temperatures that you're having right now, so they're going to be hardier, but it's also really beneficial for the ethnicities of the area. We can grow special items. You know, that's why people go to our website. They see tons of varieties, but, you know, some of them are regional specific. There's only certain areas we sell San Francisco fog, you know, those type of things. So it really helps. But as far as in distribution, there's three of us that work in our office here in Alabama, and pretty much from March until June, we are here 7 days a week. So it's our, you know, this is really the push time for us.
That must mean that come July, you like to take a little time off.
Very much so.
And I love the fact that you, as we mentioned the last time you and I talked, you started basically the way all gardeners do is a little bit at a time. You know, you were watering the plants. You know, you were working in a greenhouse. You saw how plants grow. And that's what you want from somebody who's doing your work, somebody who's done it themselves. Because part of the problem with new gardeners is they feel so lost. They feel like, you've heard this a zillion times also from folks who say, I can't grow anything. And I always want to say to them, no, you really can. It's not that hard, and I'll teach you how to do this. I bet you feel the same way.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I was fortunate enough to grow up in this industry, so I've been around it most of my life. But, you know, we're always working with customers to make things easier for them, especially in the garden, because like you said, there's a lot of people who say they have a black thumb and they just really don't know what they're doing. But a cool thing about this, Mike, is I'm glad you brought it up, because Bonnie has spent the past year, our team has been working on a new app for Apple products. So it's called Homegrown with Bonnie Plants, and it's available in the App Store now. They can go in and download it, and it really is a journal for your garden. You can keep track of photos, take notes, set reminders and notifications for watering, for feeding and fertilizing, and you can see the grow guides for each plant. So all that information that you're accustomed seeing on the tags is in your iPhone. Not to mention, how many times have you gone and planted your garden, Mike, and you know, you lost the pixie tag? All right, well, it turns out that is the best tomato that you've had in your garden.
Always.
Well, now with this, you can log your garden in the app, and it'll tell you what you planted last year, and you can keep track of the harvest. So you know your performers, you know your duds. You can know if it's something you want to repeat or if it's something you want to try a new variety out with. So it's a new way of gardening, so to speak, because you can keep track of all of your progress. And the cool thing is you can share your triumphs or what you're having issues with friends via social networks like Facebook and Twitter and all those type things.
And I'm glad you brought up the app, and I'm going to give you a ding for that, because I was going to bring it up because it's one of the things that we've been talking about on the show and that you guys have been advertising on my program. Now, the only thing I have to say is I have an Android phone at the moment, but I bet you guys are working on that right now too.
We are. It takes a little bit longer to get the Android systems and everything out, just because of platform. So, you know, we developed the Apple version, and Android is coming. So Android users, just be patient with us. For Android users, you can use the website. We have updated the website, so it looks great through mobile, and you can access all those type things through it as well. A lot of the same information, just in a handier way with the app. But, you know, one of those things is, of course, our tomato and pepper chooser to help people who aren't, you know, who are novice gardeners and trying to find the right kind for them. So if somebody wants a mild pepper, we want to make sure they don't go to a habanero. they can stay more towards like a Cajun bell or a cow horn or something along those lines.
Well, let's talk about that particular program that you have. And believe me, I understand what you're talking about. Right, you know, Google just announced that it's changing its metrics, and if you're not app friendly, if you're not, or rather, smartphone friendly, your website's going to sink in the ranking. So everybody's scrambling to make their websites smartphone friendly. But your website has just so much stuff on it right now. But let's talk about that program you were talking about now. So to help people choose the right plant.
Well, we have what we call the tomato chooser and the pepper chooser.
Okay.
So it's two different things. Basically, the way the pepper chooser works is off of Scoville units. We base it off of heat so that people can search for sweet, mild, medium, hot, or, you know, the extreme, the habaneros, the Thai hots, so that they know what they're getting, you know, because there's a lot of people that really want hot peppers, and there's some that just kind of want to be on the borderline just to get the flavor. With the tomato chooser, we get into a lot more details, whether it be a determinant or an indeterminate, slicing, sauces, you know, sandwiches, salads, how you want to use the tomato in the finished harvest, as well as colors, acidity, you know, heirloom, non-heirloom, all those different, you know, things to tie in, all the way up to the ounces. You know, if you want a small cherry tomato, up to a big Park's Whopper, kind that you can slice and throw on a hamburger and it's going to cover the bun. So
there are people who say, oh, I don't know how to grow anything, and I'm so confused, there's too many varieties.
The worst thing you can have, Mike, is somebody who has an apartment. They want to grow a tomato. They want to be successful in a tomato, but they don't know what they're looking for. The next thing they know, they've got 7 to 8 feet of tomato growing off of the side of their balcony, and they have no clue how to control it. You know,
and you tell them there's such a thing as a determinate plant, but
there
then
you go.
And people don't know that there, and let's just say that there are two kinds of tomatoes, one that will just keep growing forever if you let it, and the other that gets to a certain size and then it stops, and that's called
that's
a determinate tomato. And if you've got limited space, that might be what you want. The other reason people grow determinate tomatoes is they want to harvest everything at the same time.
Yep. So if you're canning or you're doing salsas stuff, you're going to be putting up determinate is definitely the way to go because you can get the majority of the harvest. It will still bear, you know, it would still bear fruit throughout the season, but it's going to produce the majority of its harvest at one time.
I want to talk to you really quickly about something that's called the Bonnie Plants Cabbage Program.
Sure.
Cabbage doesn't seem like too sexy a vegetable.
It's not. I mean, we'll be honest about that. I'll agree with you on that.
So why do you have a cabbage program?
Well, Bonnie was founded in 1918, as many people may or may not know. But what they probably don't know is that it was started with 2 pounds of cabbage seed that was grown as produce.
That's it, huh?
That's it. So that's the cabbage tie-in. That's where the cabbage comes from.
Okay.
But the cool thing about this is we wanted to develop a program for kids to get involved in gardening, because let's face it, you know, you deal with the children these days, and you go into a school system and ask them, you know, where does milk come from? And they're going to say the grocery store. You know, we're fortunate enough that a lot of ag programs are teaching ag in the classroom now for elementary schools. But with gardening, we want to get them interested in gardening. So what we came up with is this cabbage program. We use an OS cross cabbage, and the OS stands for oversized because these cabbage heads can get up to 50 pounds.
Yikes.
We've had some up as high as 75 pounds. So the kids really get to see a tremendous growth in this cabbage, and it keeps them excited. Well, they also want to do more stuff. But in the end of it, the classes pick a winner. And then that class winner gets pulled into a state winner for each state in the continental United States. And we select a state winner through a random drawing with the Commissioner of Agriculture or the governor. And that child gets a $1,000 scholarship.
That's fabulous. And, of course, you can find all that information at bonnieplants.com. We've only got a couple of minutes here, so I guess what I want to get from you is what plants are you really excited about this year in 2015?
Well, the cool thing about being here at the main office is I've got access to a acre trial garden that we have here. So we're always trying new products out. In the past couple of years, we've had a couple of different things that we've been using, and we finally have launched them into the product line so the consumers can find them now. We've got a new heirloom coming out, which is the Amish paste heirloom.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that online. It looks very interesting.
It's an old standard heirloom Roma, basically. It's comes from Wisconsin, is probably where it's most popular at, but it's an 8 to 12 ounce fruit size, so it's a good size Roma. And it's going to be anywhere from 80 to 90 days is a life cycle as far as before it starts to mature.
Okay.
But our two tomatoes that we've come out with that have really been good is the Charger and the Debut. And they're both hybrids. They're also both determinates. But the Charger has got Freesium, gray leaf spot, and a couple of years ago we ran into a real big problem with yellow leaf curl.
Mm.
It is resistant to that.
And folks who don't understand that, when we're talking diseases here about tomatoes.
Exactly, yeah. Anytime you go to a Bonnie rack and you see those weird letters, the V's, the F's, you know, all that stands for resistances. The more resistant of a tomato, the hardier it is, depending on your climate, especially down here in the South with a lot of humidity. And heat, we really have to be particular what we do. But the Debut is an 8 to 10 ounce fruit, 70 days, so it produces early. It's still a determinant, so it's a determinant version of the Early Girl. It's going to get ready quick. It's going to have a good flavor and a large fruit size. But you know, we've added many eggplants, and we've really seen a trend in Asian cuisine, especially with home cooks in the gardens, whether it be the Ichabod eggplant or looking for, you know, certain style tomatoes. We've added the shishito pepper now, which is very common in most stir fries that you see when you're out. So we have those now, so the people who enjoy cooking Japanese or Chinese, any type of Asian cuisine, they've got that available now, so you can find those.
American tastes in cuisine are becoming more varied, and what better way to take advantage of it than to go to bonnieplants.com or, you know, stop by your favorite outlet, your retailer, and look for the Bonnie label. And if you don't know what it looks like, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, because we've got it up there on the site. Sydney Phelps, it's always great to talk to you. You know, this could go on for a long time, but I know you're in the middle of getting stuff done. That's your job, and I'm glad you're doing it. And I appreciate talking to you once again this year, and I hope we do it again next year.
That sounds great, man. I appreciate it. Good luck to all of your listeners in their gardens, and make sure that they, you know, they're going to go to the website, but we're also available on all the social aspects. So take pictures of your garden, share it with us, and get in with the Dirty Finger Club, as they say, everybody who likes to get out in the garden, as well as our Facebook
page. Yeah, and let's not forget that if you got an iPhone, you can get the app.
Right. Just go in the App Store, search Homegrown with Bonnie Plants, and it will come up, and you can download that. It's a free app. There are no in-app purchases or anything like that. It's completely free to the consumer. So.
And I will be sitting patiently here at home.
Waiting on the Android.
Waiting on the Android. And I'm sure it'll come out next year. So, great. Thank you, Sydney. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Mike. Have a great one.
And with that, all I have left to say is go green or go home. See you next time. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.